This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatimi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Qul in صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين لا شريك له وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة وزر أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم بما كنتم فيه تختلفون وهو الذي جعلكم خلائف الأرض ورفع بعضكم فوق بعض درجات ليبلوكم فيما آتاكم إن ربك
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things. And no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land, and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
This hour's headline: Syrians go to the polls to elect a new president for the next 7 years. Bashar al-Assad is widely expected to win a fourth seven-year term. Iran slams as genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity Israel's targeting of Gaza's residential areas, schools, media offices, and other civilian centers. Anti-racism protests erupt in the U.S. on the anniversary of the murder of African-American George Floyd by a white police officer. Polls open in Syria as people vote to elect the country's next president. Syrians are able to cast their ballots in more than 12,000 polling centers. The Interior Ministry says 18 million Syrians are eligible to vote. Syrian expatriates and refugees cast an early ballot last week in Syria's embassies throughout the world. President Bashar al-Assad, Abdullah Salom Abdullah, a former state minister, and Mahmoud Mara'i, and opposition figure, are the three candidates running for president. The U.S., the EU, Britain have already denounced the election, which is expected to see Bashar al-Assad winning for the fourth term. Damascus, however, says the vote is a sovereign Syrian affair and that only Syrians have the final word in the matter. Let's bring in Muhammad Ali from a polling station in Damascus to fill us in with the latest updates. Mohammed.
Yes, Syrians continue to flock to various electoral centers in Syria. I am now in Damascus, in one of those electoral centers. The Syrian authorities established about 12,000 of them in order to receive voters. Of course, according to the Syrian authorities, over 18 million Syrians are eligible to vote. The number includes Syrians inside the country and the expatriates. And since 7 a.m., ballot boxes opened. They are expected to stay opened until 7 p.m. The large number of Syrians have been flocking in various parts of the country, of course, government-controlled parts of the country inside Syria. Syrians in areas of terrorist control like Idlib or the northeast, where the Syrian Democratic Forces are in control, cannot vote because of the terrorists and the SDF. There are three candidates, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, current president, in addition to, for the first time, a opposition figure, Mahmoud Mir'i. President Bashar al-Assad, of course, in his campaign, was focusing on reconstruction, unity, and increasing domestic production in order to face the economic sanctions by countries like the United States and Europe, while the Mahmoud Mir'i, the Syria-based opposition figure, was calling for the release of political prisoners, for a national unity government, and a Syrian dialogue between the opposition and authorities and the government over here. The third candidate is Abdullah Abdullah. He was also calling for fighting terrorism, unity, and fighting corruption. Now, we have to point out that the, this election is very important and significant for the Syrian side, because there are many countries that opposed such elections. There are many countries, actually, that tried to send terrorists to Syria in the past 10 years, topple the president, destroy the army. Today, Syrians are coming in large numbers to those electoral centers in order to send a message that they are the ones who will decide who the president will be, in accordance with the constitution, not by force, not against their will. The Syrian parliament also said that the Syrian parliament invited other parliaments of countries like Iran, the Iranian parliament, the Russian parliament. The Syrian parliament invited them to observe the election process, and actually they arrived in Syria. There are delegations from various parliaments coming here to various electoral centers to observe this process. Where I am now, also at the Ministry of Information, a media center actually was established, and for all journalists over here, if we can ask the cameraman to show us, you can see here there's a media center for the journalists. There are journalists that came from a large number of countries. The Syrian Minister of Information made it clear that it accepted all requests by any journalist who wishes to come and observe and report on those elections and report how neutral they are and if they are going well, of course. The Syrians will make their choice, will decide today. It's a one-day election. Many countries oppose, as I said. However, Syrians made it clear that they are the ones who will decide their own future, who their president will be, who will lead the nation and the country in the coming 7 years. 18 million Syrians eligible to vote, 12,000 centers across the country. On the 20th, of course, of this month, the Syrian expatriates outside the country already voted. And we, as soon as the elections, the voting ends, the count starts, and then the Higher Judicial Committee will announce the winner.
And when will that ending be today?
It is supposed to end at 7 p.m. However, if there were more Syrians coming to electoral centers at that time, the voting might continue until 12 a.m. This is the deadline, the final one. And as soon as the voting ends, the ballot boxes close. At that moment, the counting starts. And whenever the counting ends, then the winner will be announced. Basically, after the voting, after the ballot boxes close, in about 24 to 48 hours, the winner should be announced.
Many, many thanks, Muhammad Ali. We're going to return to you in the next few hours. A video has emerged showing a Palestinian teenage girl being shot in the back by an Israeli soldier outside her home in a Flashpoint East Jerusalem Al-Quds neighborhood. In the footage, the 16-year-old girl and several of her relatives can be seen stepping out of their home in Sheikh Jarrah on May the 18th. This as Palestinian activists were protesting nearby against the looming eviction of eight families from the neighborhood. Another video taken from a second angle shows Israeli troops on the street. So one of them threatens to shoot if the family members stay outside. While as the family walks back, a soldier fires a rubber bullet. The girl is seen collapsing and can be heard crying out. The same soldier then throws a stun grenade into her home. The UN Human Rights Council is set to consider an international probe into Israeli abuses in the Gaza Strip as well as the occupied Palestinian territories. The draft resolution presented by Pakistan on behalf of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation will be discussed on Thursday. It calls on the Council to urgently establish an independent international commission to investigate Israeli crimes in the latest round of violence against Palestinians. The text also demands a probe into underlying root causes of recurrent tensions and instability, including systematic discrimination and repression against the people of Palestine. It says the investigation should be focused on gathering evidence that could be used in the future to hold perpetrators to account. Tel Aviv is also being investigated by the International Criminal Court. Hezbollah Secretary General Sayed Hassan Nasrallah says any aggression against Jerusalem Al-Quds or its holy sites would mean regional war. Mariam Saleh is in Beirut.
Hezbollah Secretary General Sayed Hassan Nasrallah gave a televised speech to commemorate the 21st anniversary of the liberation of South Lebanon from the Israeli occupation. May 25, 2000 represents, as Sayed Nasrallah noted, the beginning of an era of victories for the resistance in the region. The most significant stance in this year's speech was a warning to the Israelis to keep their hands off Al-Quds and Muslim and Christian holy sites in Palestine.
The resistance in Gaza created a balance where they said any assault on Al-Aqsa Mosque and Al-Quds will lead to a military confrontation. The new equation that we need to reach is that if they touch Al-Quds, then there will be a regional war. This means all the resistance movements in the region cannot stand idly by if the holy city and the sanctities are under genuine threat. This is a genuine promise that the people of the resistance in the entire region will not forsake the holy city or the Muslim and Christian holy sites to be destroyed.
The leader of the resistance in Lebanon gave a detailed explanation of why the latest confrontation was exceptional and why its results yielded a victory for the Palestinians and a defeat for the Israelis. Experts believe the many victories for the resistance in Palestine are part of the era of triumph, which began in May of
2000.
All the past wars and victories from 2000 to 2006 in Lebanon to 2008 in Gaza until the last battle were all evidence of the accumulation of achievements for victory of the resistance. Today in Gaza in 2021, we saw the peak of the accumulated victories and the failure which is lived by the Israelis. The resistance was able to unite all the Palestinian people, and that victory was an extension of the victories in Lebanon. Now the Palestinian resistance is at the heart of the resistance front in the region, enforcing new realities.
The Lebanese celebrate May 25th as a national holiday, though the last Israeli soldier left South Lebanon on May 25th, 2000, signaling an end to over 18 years of invasions and occupation of Lebanon. The Lebanese official stance considers the Sheba Farms and Kfar Shuba Hills as Lebanese territory that should be liberated.
Celebration of Liberation Day this year in Lebanon has become intertwined with the victory in Palestine, while Lebanese recall that years of sacrifice and resistance against Israeli occupation led to liberty. They believe it is their duty to motivate the Palestinians to continue on that same path until they reach complete freedom. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
Iran says Israeli leaders must stand trial for the crimes the regime committed during its recent war on the Gaza Strip. Iran's ambassador to the UN highlighted Israel's targeting of Gaza's residential areas, schools, media offices, and other civilian centers as clear instances of genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity, as well as a violation of international humanitarian laws. Majid Takht Ravanji criticized the Security Council's failure to even issue a statement calling for an end to Israel's attacks on civilians due to the U.S., quote, shameful support for the regime. He blamed the 11-day conflict on Israel's provocative measures in Jerusalem al-Quds, especially at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, calling for international pressure for the suspension of those measures. Iran's top negotiator to the nuclear talks in Vienna, Abbas Araghchi, says despite progress made on some key differences, he is still not confident a conclusion is possible. Iran and the remaining signatories of the nuclear deal known as the JCPOA have been engaged in talks to revive the deal since April. Omaleski reports.
The remaining signatories of the nuclear deal, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, enter into a fifth round of talks aimed at reviving the agreement through the removal of U.S. sanctions and a return to full compliance by Iran.
The experts will continue the discussions in the working groups. In the meantime, the European Union, as coordinator, we'll continue the talks with all participants of the JCPOA and separately with the United States in view of finding common grounds for an agreement to take shape.
Iranian lead delegate Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi said the difficult issues that still need to be resolved have become less, although decisions must be made on the remaining differences.
We have made some progress on them.
but we are not still in a position to say that we have a clear answer for them and a clear solution actually for these key issues. But I'm confident that we would be able to make progress this time and, if possible, conclude the negotiations, which I have to repeat, I'm not confident that it would be possible to conclude the negotiations, but there is the possibility.
Iran has been demanding the removal of all U.S. sanctions, including those imposed under other labels against individuals and entities under the former administration of Donald Trump. Iran has also made it clear it would only come back to full compliance after it has verified the effective removal of sanctions, demands that up until now have not been met. Araghchi says he's seen determination and seriousness by all parties involved to reach a conclusion in the coming days, a prospect that he admits is still not by any means certain. Homolesky, Vienna.
Representatives of different resistance groups have attended the ceremony in the Iranian capital to commemorate late Deputy Commander of Iran's Quds Force, Brigadier General Syed Mohammad Hejazi. They also hailed the Quds Force for its fight against terrorism and its support for Palestinians. Humana Abedi is in Tehran with this report.
Iran's stance on Palestine has always been clear, and the Islamic Republic has always been supporting the Palestinian nation in defending their rights. Tehran believes that resistance and fighting the Israeli regime is the only way for Palestinians to gain their rights. In a ceremony in Tehran to commemorate late Deputy Commander of the IRGC's Quds Force, Brigadier General Sayed Mohammad Hejazi, it was stressed that all Muslims must support the Palestinian nation in defending their rights.
Many did not think that the Gaza Strip, which is under pressure and siege, or a small country like Lebanon, relying on the resistance, could rise up against the illegitimate Zionist regime and disturb their peace. We owe this to the efforts of commanders such as General Qasem Soleimani and General Mohammad Hejazi.
The Syrian ambassador to Iran also appreciated the efforts and activities of Quds Force commanders, including General Soleimani and Hejazi.
They played an important role in the axis of resistance to achieve several victories for the movement. They played an important role in thwarting the great conspiracy that was planned against Syria. Hopefully, we will see the victory of the Palestinian Islamic resistance against the Israeli regime soon.
He also added that Syria has overcome the crisis, and the Syrian government and people, led by President Bashar al-Assad, continue their support for the Islamic resistance and the Palestinian people as in the past.
After 11 days of onslaught on the Gaza Strip, the Israeli regime finally accepted a ceasefire brokered by Egypt, and the people over here stress today that it was a great victory for the Palestinians. Human Abedi, Tehran.
The U.S. activists and protesters denouncing police brutality against colored people are marking the coronavirus pandemic continues to take its toll on Brazil as the number of infections and fatalities keep rising there. There's been an average of 66,000 new cases per day over the past week, bringing the total infections to around 16.2 million. The country also reported well over 2,000 new deaths on Tuesday. Now, the overall fatalities have surpassed 452,000. Brazil is the world's second hardest hit country after the United States in terms of COVID deaths. This comes as delays plague Brazil's vaccine rollout, and epidemiologists warn a brutal new surge of the virus could be coming. Elsewhere in Latin America, people took to the streets in the Argentine capital of Buenos Aires to protest a 9-day lockdown. Lockdown was introduced by President Alberto Fernandez amid surging coronavirus cases and deaths. The protest came on the same day the overall number of COVID-19 deaths in Argentina surpassed 75,000 deaths, placing it among the countries with the highest fatality rates per capita in the region. Total coronavirus infections in Argentina are now close to 3.6 million. That's it for now for me.
diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained, and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. And provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
the 13th presidential election. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Iran's 13th presidential election is going to be held on June 18th. The sources of basic rights have emphasized on the necessity of supervising elections and supervising according to the Constitution. Two ways have been presented for this purpose. The first way is called judicial control and the second way is called non-judicial control. In the Islamic Republic of Iran, the non-judicial control is used. It means supervision of legislation has been ceded to a non-judicial institution called the Guardian Council of Constitution, or simply Guardian Council. Article 91 of the Islamic Republic of Iran's constitution makes it clear that in order to guard the Islamic laws and the constitution with regards to in compliance with the ratifications of the Islamic Council, Assembly, or Parliament, a council is held by the name of Guardian Council. The Guardian Council has three important duties: supervision of legislation, interpretation of the constitution, and supervision of elections. Constitution says that the Guardian Council is responsible for supervision of presidential election according to Article 99. Legally speaking, supervision of elections means a series of activities that are done by the supervising body to make sure of the accurate practicing of the law and health of election. Paragraph 2 of Article 99 says clearly, the Central Supervisory Board will supervise all phases of election. Electoral currents, the actions of the Interior Ministry and executive boards that are effective in the election, and whatever is related to the accuracy of the election. Moreover, paragraph 7 of the same law reads, the Guardian Council in all phases, in case of proving felony, will make decision with mentioning the reason for annulling or stopping the election across the country or in some regions, and it will announce its view through mass media. And the view of the Guardian Council is definite and binding in this case, and no other authority is entitled to annul or stop the election. Paragraph 8 of the law of the presidential election reads, supervision of presidential election is undertaken by the Guardian Council. This supervision is encompassing and exists in all phases and all efforts pertaining to the election. Article 99 of the Constitution emphasizes, the supervision mentioned in Article 99 is verification and includes all phases of election, such as qualification and disqualification of candidates. These duties are undertaken by the jurisprudents and lawyers of the Guardian Council. The Guardian Council has 12 members who are chosen for a 6-year period. Half of this number consists of jurisprudents and another half consists of lawyers. The 6 jurisprudents are appointed by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, while the 6 lawyers are proposed by the judiciary chief to the parliament, and the parliament appoints them through voting. The Guardian Council exercises its duty of supervision with the help of various boards: Central Board of Supervision, Provincial Boards of Supervision, and Boards of Constituency Supervision are the 3 important tools of the Guardian Council for supervision of elections in Iran. Therefore, the Constitution of the Islamic Republic of Iran has assigned the Guardian Council with the duty of supervision of elections. This supervision means legal supervision with the aim of accurate and legal performance of the process of elections, which leads to safeguarding the rights of voters. Some people have raised the ambiguity that the constitutional articles pertaining to the Guardian Council are undemocratic and exist only in Iran's constitution. These people are indeed seeking to question and damage the authenticity of the supervisory status of the Guardian Council. Such activities are all aimed at provocation and creation of fake atmospheres in a bid to disappoint the public from participation in the elections. This is why there are similar bodies in other countries for supervision and verification of the entire process of nomination and election. However, since the advent of the Islamic Republic, the Western media horns have focused on the issue of election in Iran. These media and their regional Zionist and Arab allies have tried their utmost to sell this matter that is only Iran which wields supervision on elections and qualification of candidates, and other countries are free from such issues. Definitely, there are different mechanisms in every country for elections and supervision of elections. Dear listeners, next time we will give some examples in this respect.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Ministry. According to the New York Times, Israel has already informed the United States that its forces had targeted the Iranian ship Zaviz in the Red Sea. In this context, the unnamed American official who spoke to the New York Times said that the Israelis consider this attack as a retaliation for what they call the previous Iranian strikes that had targeted Israeli ships. To add more drama to the matter, the Israelis claimed that there had been a delay in their attack to allow the American aircraft carrier in the region, Dwight D. Eisenhower, to remain at a safe distance from the Iranian ship, which Israel claims is a military one. The damage to the Iranian Zaviz vessel came as progress was reported on the first day of talks to revive American participation in the 2015 nuclear agreement between Iran and major world powers. Israel, which regards Iran as its most potent foe, strongly opposes a restoration of the agreement, which was abandoned by the Trump administration 3 years ago. Commenting on the attack, the Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh told reporters that the Zaviz ship was struck by the blast at around 6 a.m. local time on Tuesday, April 5th, near the coast of Djibouti, and sustained minor damage. No fatalities were caused by the incident, and technical evaluations on how the incident occurred and its origins are still underway. The Iranian official emphasized that Tehran will take all the necessary measures regarding the case through international bodies. Rejecting media claims, Khatibzadeh said that Zaviz is not a military vessel whose specifications and mission have been formally registered with the International Maritime Organization. In a similar incident last month, an Iranian cargo ship was damaged after it was targeted by a terrorist attack en route to Europe in the Mediterranean Sea. Tehran said back then that such acts of terror are a clear example of naval piracy and run counter to international law and the safety of commercial vessels. Welcome to the Middle East stream. I'm Marwa Osman. An Iranian cargo vessel stationed in the Red Sea was damaged by an Israeli mine attack on Tuesday, April 6th, in an escalation of the shadowy neighbor skirmishing that has characterized Israel's animosity with Iran in recent years. The attack came as Iran and world powers sat down in Vienna for the first talks about the U.S. potentially rejoining Tehran's nuclear deal, showing that challenges ahead do not rest merely in those negotiations. Now, to discuss this issue with us from California is Paul Larudi, former U.S. advisor in the Arabian Peninsula. Thank you very much for being with us, Paul, at such an early hour of the day. I really appreciate it. It seems that the break that Israel had taken during the Trump administration for halting the nuclear deal came to an end when talks now are underway in Vienna for the JCPOA. But now Israel seems more aggressive, pushing for a confrontation at any expense with Iran by targeting the Iranian cargo vessel. How do you think this will play out if Israel continues with this, least to say, reckless behavior?
Well, Israel wants confrontation. It's always shown it. It's part of its history. And it's doing it again. The result of this will be that Iran will retaliate, and it has shown that it will retaliate, for example, with the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani and the attack on the Ain al-Assad American base inside Iraq. So this is likely to be what will happen. Of course, Iran will do so proportionally. That's what they did in the case of the assassination, and that's what they will do again. And it's also the way Hezbollah functions. So there will be retaliation.
Well, Israel, which regards Iran as its most maybe potent foe in the region, strongly opposes a restoration of any nuclear agreement with Iran, and the latest that we saw is the attack on Natanz power plant as well. What does that have to do with Israel to begin with? I mean, how would an international agreement threaten Israel in any way?
Well, from Israel's point of view, the problem with the agreement is that it lifts the sanctions, and Israel wants the sanctions to continue. It wants to harm Iran as much as possible. both, Iran is standing in the way of Israeli expansion and weakening Israel's neighbors, because a powerful nation like Iran can come to the aid of Israel's neighbors. So this is part of the Israeli general strategy of weakening its neighbors, and mm-hmm. it wants as much confrontation to exist, whether from Israel directly or from the United States and other countries, to weaken Iran. So that's its objective.
Well, we did hear Tehran in the last time that there was such an attack on an Iranian vessel. It happened last month in March and on the Mediterranean Sea while the vessel was en route to Europe. But Tehran said at that time that such acts of terror are a clear example of naval piracy and run counter to all international law on the safety of commercial vessels, reiterating that it will retaliate to these acts of aggression. What are the Iranian options here? Will it just become an eye for an eye in the open sea?
Well, I think ultimately there may be some of that, an eye for an eye. And Israel has shown that it cares nothing for international law. It will behave the way it wants to. It needs some action, some retaliation, and some disciplining, as, for example, Hezbollah has shown. I mean, Hezbollah has been attacked, its members have been killed, and it has retaliated, and proportionally. And the result is that Israel becomes quiet because they know that Hezbollah has the power to do that. Well, it's the same thing with Iran. Israel has to learn that Iran's not going to take it, and that the only discipline that they're going to get is an Iranian retaliation. So there may be a tit for tat, an eye for an eye, for some time. But I think ultimately Israel will see that this is useless and that it harms Israel more than it harms Iran.
Well, it seems that several regional files are being put on hold, waiting for the breakthrough talks of the JCPOA and the return of possible diplomatic relations between Iran and the U.S., basically from Yemen to Lebanon to Syria and Iraq, and now the Israeli-Iranian feud. Are we exaggerating if we say the entire West of Asia is right now at a crossroad?
If it's not right now at a crossroads, it soon will be, with things going the way they are. In fact, the sanctioned nations are becoming a kind of common market of sanctioned nations. They are helping each other. They are finding allies. Iran just signed a 25-year economic agreement, $400 billion with China, and it's and Russia also is participating in this kind of sanctions common market. Even the European nations have kind of found another way to get past the sanctions for certain purposes. So things are changing. The power of the United States is extending its power beyond its means, and the result will be that the other nations will get together and find ways around it and to develop their own power base. They need to do that because the main threat is the United States.
Well, wouldn't that bear the question of when that happens, wouldn't the United States go all out for a war to try and retake the position that it had lost?
It's always possible, but I don't think the United we can hope that the United States population will resist that, because the U.S. population is being impoverished and is without resources. More people are on the street. The homeless population is growing by leaps and bounds, and to have this greater burden than they have now, when half of their entire national budget is going for defense, more than half, in fact, I think the United States is reaching the limits of its capabilities, and we're watching a superpower decline.
Mm-hmm. Well, it definitely is something to look out for in West Asia, especially when Israel has been very blatant about its attack on whether the Islamic Republic of Iran or other allies of the Islamic Republic of Iran in the region, namely in Syria, Iraq, and in South Lebanon. I want to thank you very much from California, Mr. Paul LaRudy, former U.S. advisor in the Arabian Peninsula, for joining us to talk about this shadowy naval war that's going on in our region. Now, please stay tuned, because next we will be talking how Hezbollah is implementing the economic resistance in Lebanon.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
For over a year, there has been a severe economic and political crisis in Lebanon, whose end is not in sight. In view of this, the Lebanese resistance Hezbollah has made a series of moves aimed at helping any needy Lebanese population cope with the negative implications of the economic crisis. With shortages of goods and skyrocketing prices, Hezbollah has opened a chain of supermarkets selling inexpensive goods at subsidized prices that are about 30 to 50% lower than the market price. Hezbollah's response to the economic crisis in Lebanon in this following report.
Since October 2019, there has been a severe financial, economic, and political crisis in Lebanon, whose end is not in sight. Underlying the crisis are fundamental problems, mainly firmly rooted corruption and a chronic state of political instability. Additional difficulties have been added to the fundamental problems. The COVID-19 crisis, the negative effects of U.S. sanctions on the Lebanese economy and banking system, the explosion of the port of Beirut, difficulties stemming from the global war on Syria, and the lack of external assistance due to Lebanon's failure to carry out the reforms required by the international community. These effects were reflected in a shortage of basic essential products like food, fuel, and medication, difficulties in the banking system, and even initial signs of weakened security. In view of this, Hezbollah has made a series of moves aimed at helping the Lebanese population cope with the negative implications of the economic crisis. As the Lebanese market suffers from shortages of goods and skyrocketing prices, Hezbollah has opened a chain of supermarkets called Al-Nur Depot in southern Lebanon, South Beirut, and the Baqaa Valley. These supermarkets sell inexpensive goods at subsidized prices that are about 30 to 50% lower than the market prices. Payment is made through a special shopper's card called the Al-Sajjad card, named after the fourth Shia imam, who attached great importance to mutual solidarity in society. A drug shortage in Lebanon also prompted Hezbollah to begin purchasing Syrian and Iranian inexpensive drugs and medical products. The medical products were distributed to Hezbollah's affiliated pharmacies to cover the shortage. A fuel shortage that has led to rising prices of fuel products and frequent power outages also prompted Hezbollah to purchase fuel products and supply fuel to gas stations in the resistance areas, where the U.S. undeclared sanctions are leading to critical fuel shortages in gas stations. To help the Lebanese people overcome the severe economic crisis accompanied by currency collapse and insane increase in prices, Hezbollah has become the last resort for the Lebanese public to survive the worst economic crisis in the country's modern history.
to discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Dr. Ibrahim Moussaoui, Lebanese Member of Parliament for the Loyalty to the Resistance Bloc, Hezbollah. Thank you very much for being with us, Dr. Moussaoui. Now, following the difficulties caused by the economic crisis in Lebanon, Hezbollah's response was direct aid of its community by opening a chain of supermarkets in South Lebanon, in South Beirut, and in the Baqa' Valley. These supermarkets are selling inexpensive goods at subsidized prices, despite the fact that they are not subsidized goods, but with prices lower than 50% of the market price. Why on earth would that call for any scrutiny or even frustration from anyone?
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to discuss this. First of all, you're talking about a highly divided Lebanese society. You're talking about a kind of polarization between East and West, if you want to say, between people who follow the Western hegemonic powers, namely the USA and other powers who support the tightening of the Western grip over the country and over the region and over the area, as we all know, and between others who are the supporters of their own country, their domestic genuine interest of the people and the land, the liberators of the land, those who are deeply entrenched in their lands. This kind of division is going to be translated into positions of frustration from one area and from one crowd, from one audience. And on the other hand, it's a sigh of relief. It's a hilarious and happiness for the faithfulness, for the loyalty, for the attention, for the care from Hezbollah, from the resistance to the Lebanese people. I say the Lebanese people, yes, because the Shia areas that you mentioned, they represent the part of the Lebanese society. If we have the capability, we are starting to support in the most striking areas, in the areas that are under the highest tightened pressure from the United States of America. And we all know that, and all the Lebanese know that. If our capabilities are enough, we are going to extend this to whoever would accept it or would want it, because, as I told you, this has been a source of criticism from other sides. We don't care about it. We are talking about people who have served their lives, who have sacrificed their blood, who have given everything to this true path of resistance and nationalism.
Well, Dr. Moussaoui, the thing that actually brought about a certain kind of frustration, which I found odd, but we need to explain to the audience, which is the payments for these goods in the Hezbollah supermarkets, they are being made through a special shopper's card called a Sajjad card. It's the name of the fourth Shia Imam, Zain al-Abidin, the son of Imam Hussein, alayhi salam, who attached great importance to mutual solidarity in society. That was his legacy. Does that suggest purpose that this card is strictly for the Shia of Lebanon?
Absolutely not. I did tell you this because when we talk about the universality of the message of Islam, it's for everybody, anywhere, anyone who is in need. When we talk about Imam Sajjad, Imam Zain al-Abidin, salamullah alayhi, we're talking about a source of mercy, a source of kindness and grace for all. And here we are talking especially on the eve of Shahr Ramadan. May all of the prayers of Allah be upon all the believers and all the people. This is the month of mercy. We wanted to emulate this great Imam who used to have the goods of the people, of the poor, of the orphans, of the needy. He used to go from one place to another, carrying this over his back and not showing himself during the nights and during the days. He was like going there and they didn't know about him. It was until he died that the people knew that he was the one who was sending the message. Of course, at the time, the society was not that complicated. The houses were very few. If we talk about 100 years ago or 200 years ago in the villages, everybody would know everybody. What about if you're talking about 1,300 or 1,200 years ago? So this is the message that we wanted to send. It's not limited. It's not restricted to these areas. But it is the beginning. And hopefully we would be able to extend this to everyone who is in need.
Well, a fuel shortage that has led to rising prices of the fuel products and frequent power outages due to the bankruptcy of the Lebanese Central Bank, which is a result of decades of corruption in Lebanon. Hezbollah has begun, the party has begun purchasing fuel products, especially diesel fuel, and supplying fuel gas oil to gas stations that are not receiving any fuel from the government, especially in stations that happen to be in areas that support Hezbollah, which is basically undeclared U.S. sanctions against an entire population. This is basically collective punishment. But if the central bank is bankrupt, how come only the Shia communities are suffering from this fuel shortage?
Well, actually, it's not only the fuel shortages in the Shia area. To tell you the truth, there are restrictions on the borders here and there. And there is another point that I want, unfortunately, when we talk about the merchants, the big merchants, those who have the ability to make any kind of restriction over the fuel oil, over these goods, they want to keep them, so when the prices go up, they would make use of it. This is a big problem, actually. But to tell you the truth, Hezbollah, not Hezbollah, the Iranian side, the Iranian ambassador to Lebanon has made it very clear to the Lebanese government, everyone, that Iran is ready to hand out the help for the Lebanese community and for the Lebanese government, for the Lebanese state, to take the fuel from Iran, and they would use the Lebanese lira, the Lebanese pound. This is unprecedented, and this would help in easing, and if you want, and solving the problem of the fuel, and this would like save a very important and dear
refused.
Money for the government. The government refused. They don't want to take this position. The same offer has been given about the electricity, that Iran is ready to build fields and plants of electricity, so it could be locally and domestically here in Lebanon generated, not to take from any side. Mm-hmm. Again, it was refused. So it is the general help for all of the Lebanese people. Some accepted, other refused. This is the problem. Again, those who refused, some of them because they hate the axis of resistance, because they follow another completely different axis. Mm-hmm. And the other people, they are afraid of more restrictions and more sanctions from the American side. We in this axis of resistance, we are going to do everything possible to help the Lebanese generally and our people particularly to ease the situation over them,
well,
whether it is for fuel or whatever.
Unfortunately,
please.
That's all the time that we have. We have one more minute, Dr. Moussaoui, but I want to talk about expanding the services of Al-Qard Al-Hassan Association just after the collapse in Lebanon. I know that these plans are Hezbollah's ways of dealing with the economic downfall, but now they have their own chain of banks as well, and also ATM machines. But doesn't that just fall in the validation of the notion of a state within a state?
Absolutely not. I categorically deny and refuse this. To tell you the truth, the government is there and we want them. This is something, when you talk, you're not talking about chain of banks or branches of banks. You're talking about ATMs. It is only restricted to this charity groups called Qard Al-Hassan. It has been there. Qard Al-Hassan has been there as an institution since more than 30 years. But yes, truly, it has been expanded after the sanctions that has taken place, because people want to put their money in a safe place that they can take it anytime they want, and they are not taking any kind of interests for having it there. This is something that has been, you know, when you put people at risk and they make it an opportunity, this is the menace that has been changed into an opportunity by Hezbollah, by the axis of the resistance, by the people who trust the resistance. Mm-hmm. This has pushed many people, because they talked about Qard Al-Hassan, many people felt that it is their duty to go and put their money there, because mm-hmm. it is safer than the
So it's basically a matter of trust between the Lebanese
Absolutely.
People and
Absolutely.
The resistance. I want to thank
and
you
if you
very
ask,
much.
If you ask all of the experts, they tell you the number one issue in Lebanon is the trust.
Exactly. I want to thank you very much, Dr. Ibrahim Moussaoui, Lebanese Member of Parliament, for the loyalty to the resistance bloc, Hezbollah, for being with us to talk about this very important issue, how Hezbollah is leading an economy of resistance in Lebanon. And thank you. Please stay tuned next week for more from the Middle East Stream.
in the limelight.
In Britain, the Black Lives Matter activist Sasha Johnson is in a critical condition after sustaining a gunshot wound to her head in an incident in South London. Her affiliated group, Taking the Initiative Party, has announced on social media. In a statement on the group's Facebook page, the party said that the incident happened in the early hours of Sunday morning, 23rd of May, and followed numerous death threats to Sasha Johnson. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist Edna Mohammed. The piece is titled, BLM Activist Sasha Johnson in Critical Condition After Gunshot to the Head. In Britain, the Black Lives Matter activist Sasha Johnson is in a critical condition after sustaining a gunshot wound to her head in an incident in South London. Her affiliated group, Taking the Initiative Party, has announced on social media. In a statement on the group's Facebook page, the Taking the Initiative Party said, the incident happened in the early hours of Sunday morning, 23rd of May, and followed numerous death threats to Sasha Johnson. The statement said, it is with great sadness that we inform you that our own Sasha Johnson has sustained a gunshot wound to her head. She is currently hospitalized and in critical condition. The incident happened in the early hours of this morning, following numerous death threats. Sasha has always been actively fighting for black people and the injustices that surround the black community.